You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. It is Hump Day Wednesday here on the Maggie Dawn Show and the Civic Media Radio Network. We do have a packed program this afternoon. Our discussion will, per usual here on this program, talk about the impacts in your life to regular people from the brutal bill that the House of Representatives has adopted that will basically help transfer even more money from working people to the top 1%. I mean, as if we haven't done enough of that damage already. Remember, everybody, you want your pins that say 51 trillion so that your friends ask you, what is 51 trillion? And you can say, that is the amount of money that Republican policies have helped transfer, the amount of wealth that Republican policies have helped transfer from the bottom 90% of us to the top 1% from 1981 to 2021. And all of that disastrous hurt being leveled at ordinary Americans is only continuing, multiplying, and exponentially increasing under the MAGA regime. I've got a guest here today to help us understand what's going on with emergency food assistance. I always thought it was kind of a given. Let's make sure people have enough to eat. But apparently not. I am very pleased to welcome to the show for this first half hour, Bobby Kogan. He's the Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And he used to work in the Office of Management and Budget when it wasn't Russell Vogt and some very creepy cast of characters. Welcome so much, Bobby, to the Maggie Dawn Show. Pleasure to have you.
Maggie, thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, so let's just start at the federal level, and then I want to get down into the details of how Wisconsin families will be impacted. But on the federal level, I've been hearing some pretty big numbers that we're looking at 300 plus billion in cuts to emergency food assistance. And that may, in turn, deprive some 18 million plus kids of school lunches. Are these facts correct? Tell us how to understand what's going on with SNAP.
Right. So the House bill calls for the single largest cuts to SNAP in history by far. They shift a lot of costs on the states. They kick a lot of people off. You put it all together, they'd be kicking off 3 million people, but they'd kind of be putting at risk maybe 11 million more people. And then on top of that, they'd be, I think, you're pulling back the TFAP, this kind of emergency money that kind of helps states out, runs food banks, helps with schools and that sort of stuff. And so I think that was what you were referring to. So put it all together, it would kind of dramatically increase hunger in the United States of America.
No question about it. And again, I want to place this, Bobby, in context for people as folks who may be entering Social Security eligibility ranges. They're going to not be able to get a hold of anybody at the Social Security Administration. People who receive Medicaid are not going to be able to keep their benefits going, even if they are qualified and working full time to receive those benefits. And bellies will go empty. More Americans will be hungry than before the brutal big bill. So we've got the basics down, Bobby. Let's dive into some of the details in Wisconsin and what's going to be happening for Wisconsin families that have food insecurity, a particularly pernicious problem made only worse by Donald Trump's terror of tariff tax, right? Like, food prices have been all over the place. He was largely elected in part to help bring egg prices down, food prices down. We're not seeing that. One need only go to the grocery store, buy what you usually do. And it's just as expensive as it was before January 21st, if not more expensive. So what are we looking at? What are the numbers? How many Wisconsin families and individuals do we think are going to be impacted by these draconian cuts to emergency food help?
Well, could be as many as all of them. This is a really untested kind of thing. So number one thing that it does that would affect every single Wisconsinite who is receiving food assistance is that they would bar any future administration from updating kind of the way that the numbers are pegged. That's all a long way of saying that the Biden administration increased They kind of took into account the fact that the cost of a healthy meal had risen faster than inflation. They took that into account. They increased benefits to account for that. This would bar that for everyone. And so what this means is that relative to what people are expected to be able to get, everyone's benefits will be behind. That's one thing that they're doing to, you know, all, I don't know, maybe million Wisconsinites who are receiving aid. Number two, now we're kicking off a meaningful portion of that population. There are existing work requirements for SNAP, but these are kind of much more draconian. They would make it so that if you are legally retired, all of a sudden you might not be receiving your benefits anymore. They bump it up, that kind of able-bodied up to 64. And so if you are retired, you're receiving your Social Security.
Too bad.
Now all of a sudden, yeah, too bad. They're also kind of, there's a kind of a hardship waiver that you, there's kind of an understanding that if the economy goes sour, then we understand that you might have lost your job, but they're bumping that up to be 10%. And to put that in the 10% unemployment rate, and to put that in context, in the Great Recession, right, when in 2007, 2008, 2009, we hit 10% in 1 month once. And so what we're really saying is, you know, good luck, unless we have true economic
collapse,
calamity.
Yes.
Yeah, total collapse. You're just still going to be out. You're just still going to be out your food assistance because now you're deemed a moocher. So you lose it. Then all of a sudden, you know, your family has less money. They also change. It used to be that if you had dependents, anyone 17 or younger, then you're kind of held harmless. They're switching that from anyone 6 or younger. So now there's less money for you and your 7-year-old because you're deemed a moocher because you lost your job in 9.5% unemployment situation. So all of a sudden, tons and tons and tons of people are kind of in trouble. And then the thing that's even worse behind all of this is that they're shifting a lot of costs onto states. I mean, kind of in some cases, 20%, 25%. And so now all of a sudden states are having to make up the difference. And they do that how? By raising sales taxes and property taxes on Wisconsinites.
Yeah, Bobby, that number that has been estimated by the Wisconsin Department of Human Services is estimated to be costing Wisconsin taxpayers at least $314 million more a year. Simply because of the cost shift, this bill anticipates, hey, we're not going to pay for it anymore, the federal government. Hey, state and state taxpayers, you pay for that. That again, minimum $314 million per year. Folks, if you're just joining us, my name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got Bobby Cogan with us. He used to work at the Office of Management and Budget. He is currently the Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're talking about the impacts of the big, brutal bill on food insecure families in Wisconsin. Here are some facts. Food support is received by 1 in 8 Wisconsin residents. I just want us to sit with that for a minute. 1 in 8. I guarantee you, every single person who can hear my voice right now, there is someone in your circle of connection that is receiving emergency food assistance. You may not know it. They may not tell you because there has been such shame since Ronald Reagan attached to receiving this kind of help. But someone you know in your circle is receiving emergency food assistance. As Bobby has been explaining to us, all of those people may see benefit reductions, benefit loss, additional red tape to keep food in their bellies. Bobby, at base, there seems to be a tension to me between the objectives that I hear the MAGA regime say that they want to see in the world, people pulling themselves up out of poverty, people discovering, as if we all didn't know this, the dignity of being able to support oneself through work, right? All of these things. They want better achievement, better results from public education. Nobody can do any of those things if they're sick and hungry. So I just don't get how this gets us closer to this, you know, perfect future state that the MAGA regime envisions where everybody's perfectly self-sufficient and nobody ever falls on hard times.
Yeah, I mean, You got to be pretty heartless to take food away from a 7-year-old because their parent lost a job. None of the stuff that they're doing can really credibly be called going after waste, fraud, and abuse, right? They frame it as waste, fraud, and abuse, but it's not fraudulent for you to receive food assistance just because you lost your job. It's not fraudulent for you to receive food assistance if you're caretaking, right? So one of the things that they're actually doing is they're putting up significant, you mentioned this, but they're putting up a lot of red tape. And so, you know, the truth is almost everyone who really can be working and on these benefits is working, right? So plenty of people have disabilities, plenty of people are kind of in permanent caretaking roles. And then of the remaining people, almost everyone is working. But by putting up this red tape, you make it harder for everyone. You end up disenrolling tons of people who are kind of doing everything right and by the books. And so what it ends up doing is just kicking off a lot of people and taking away their food assistance. And there's actually a lot of evidence that, that shows that if one part of the family, you know, like if the parent ends up being no longer eligible, they don't necessarily know that they're eligible
their
on behalf
kid,
of their kid,
yes.
And then they don't sign up. And so now you're just like completely out the money. As you say, it is really hard to succeed if you are hungry, and it's really hard to succeed if you're sick. It's also really meager, right? I mean, SNAP benefits, the average SNAP benefit is a little bit more than $2 per person per meal. Very, very, very cheap. And so you're really pinch and penny, right? And I guess the other point that I would make is it's not as if we are asking everyone to tighten their belts. It's not as if they came and they said the deficit is out of control, so we need everyone to tighten their belts. What they're doing is they're making the poorest people in America tighten their belts to help pay for giant tax cuts to the rich. They're letting the rich loosen their belts while the poor are tightening their belts. And that is, a pretty ridiculous bill.
There are key facts about those that receive emergency food assistance. These are working people. These are not people that are sitting around simply collecting emergency food assistance. 60% of households that receive food assistance in the state of Wisconsin have kids that are receiving those emergency food benefits. And as you say, Bobby, these are not luxury benefits. These are de minimis benefits. We're going to drop the specific dollar figures, again, averaging under $2 per day, per meal, per person. We're going to talk about those specifics, again, the scope of impact here in the state of Wisconsin. Join Bobby and I, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We're going to all do better when we got bellies full to go to school and work. Why does the MAGA regime want to make Wisconsinites hungrier? I do not understand. This discussion continues on the other side.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. It ain't one love in the big, brutal bill, I'll tell you that much. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My special guest this half hour is Bobby Kogan of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He's their senior director in charge of federal budget policy. Thanks again, Bobby, for being here. I wanted to go kind of head on at this premise for so many of these cuts. As an economist and a lawyer and someone that worked in government, there are always places for government to be more efficient, more effective, more transparent, and stop the very few people who abuse systems. However, there are ways to actually test and audit systems to determine how much fraud is occurring. And these systems are, in fact, tested all of the time. They all have independent inspectors general under all these executive branch departments. The state conducts audits. It's random sampling of beneficiaries, right? They'll pull a name. And depending on how large the number of beneficiaries and the dollar value of beneficiaries, they'll pull more, right? It's a randomized sample driven by statistics. They'll pull it out and be like, all right, let's follow this down and make sure, hey, is this person actually eligible? Are they receiving the correct amount? They'll do all of that. They do it all the time. We know from those analyses that in the state of Wisconsin, this program has been both incredibly effective and incredibly efficient from a dollar perspective with very low levels of fraud. What I just, as a level set, wanted to ask you is, I have yet to see a single verifiable set of audit analyses or other analyses presented by a Republican to prove systemized fraud, waste, and abuse in any of these programs that we're talking about. It is very easy to come up with the extreme one-off example of the bad actor and the fraudster. Donald Trump pardons fraudsters today. He does it every day. There's always bad actors in every sector of our economy and life that do bad things. The one-off example does not prove a point about systemic fraud or waste or abuse or inefficiencies. I haven't seen a single thing like that in any of these programs. Every bit of analysis that I've seen from nonpartisan outfits, from the CBO and inspectors general, prove exactly the opposite. Do you know of anything, or is this actual? I mean, that's a fact question. Is there systemized fraud, waste, and abuse in the emergency food assistance program? They've not provided any evidence that there is, have they?
Yeah, I mean, the reason you haven't found it is that it doesn't exist. I would say they do two kind of things that I think are fundamentally misleading in this space. Number one, they take the error rate and they pretend it's the like fraud
rate.
Fraudulent.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. And you can get an error. First of all, you get an error for underpaying, and then they, just to make it up, let's say you have 1% overpayment, 1% underpayment. They treat that as a 2%
error rate. It's additive, yeah. Yes.
Right.
Instead of the net dollar effect of the errors. Yes, we could do the stat nerd stuff on this quite a bit.
Yeah. And then they also, if you mischeck a box, they consider that an error. But if everything kind of worked correctly, even if you were correctly signed up and everything, if you have mischecked a box or whatever, then it is considered an error. And so they take basically these inflated numbers and pretend that it's fraud. And then the other big thing that they do that's fundamentally misleading is we deliberately let the error rate slide up during COVID when it was really tough to track people's income.
Verify.
And we said, yeah, and we said, we would rather pay a little bit too much and make sure than keep out people in the middle of a pandemic, right? And so that was a deliberate decision.
And let's be clear about that. There is no business on planet Earth that runs without some inefficiencies, without some employee, without somebody juicing the system. Every person listening to my voice right now can be like, oh yeah, that was that guy at my office. Yeah, he was always like working the angle. That exists everywhere. But if the purpose of the program is to keep families from going hungry, to ensure people have health insurance, they have dignified retirements, you don't punish the fat of the bell curve in a cruel and inhumane way because you've got the one guy that's the bad actor, right? Like that just, it doesn't make any sense even from an absolute dollar or percentage basis. And I wanted to give people this statistic, Bobby, before we run out of time. Pre-pandemic, again, for the reason that Bobby just explained, we'd rather err on the side of caution and make sure American and Wisconsin families are fed then shut it down and have more people that legitimately qualified going hungry. Pre-pandemic, they can do an assessment of how many families in the state are food eligible based on income tax filings. 92% of eligible families in the state of Wisconsin were enrolled in SNAP and properly receiving their benefits. What is going to happen is more and more tens of thousands of families will go hungry. What are the dollars that we're talking about? Want everybody to think, if you even know, if you're so lucky that you don't know what your household's budget is, guess what? You're top 10%. I'm not talking about you. For people that actually have to calculate this stuff, think in your head, how much do you spend in a month on groceries? Here's the SNAP benefit. The average SNAP benefit in the state of Wisconsin for an average household, $257 a month. I challenge anyone to go out and buy all the food you need for a single person, for an average household, for $257 a month. What are we doing? Bobby, what do you want people to know? What should they do about this?
The most important thing you can do is, if you have a Republican representative, call them. And if you have family members who live in you know, red states, you should have them call. And this would be something that would kick millions of people off of their healthcare, millions of people off their food assistance. And we shouldn't let that happen.
Thanks so much, Bobby Kogan, Senior Director for Federal Budget Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. When we come back, it is time for Broad Appeal. Female amazing broads running for office, making things better for your community and mine, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're not every woman. Women's. There's three of us this afternoon. Really pumped to be joined by my frequent co-host for this fine segment, Dr. Kristen Lierley. And Kristen and I are very happy to bring on with us candidate for the 3rd Congressional District looking to unseat the man who swore up and down he would never cut emergency food assistance for Wisconsinites and then promptly did so last week, Representative Derek Van Orten. We're joined by 3rd Congressional District candidate Laura Benjamin. Welcome, Kristen. Welcome, Laura. How are you both?
So good. So happy to be with you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me and rescheduling since my bout with COVID.
How are you feeling? Let's just start with that. I'm having a perimenopausal hot flash right now. How are you doing?
I'm doing a lot better now, thanks.
Good.
Takes a little bit to recover from COVID. I totally forgot that that was the case, and my 4-day timeline was optimistic, to say the least.
It still packs a wallop.
It does.
I have things to say about your hot flash and about COVID.
Please, Dr. Lierley.
We need more access to menopausal therapies, and please, could we continue to vaccinate pregnant people and children against COVID?
My goodness.
Or maybe anyone that wants a vaccine instead of making it, you know, putting all these barriers between people and their care.
It is just so disheartening. And frankly, it is both of these things are killing people. Not being able to be treated for your menopausal symptoms, that's a long, slow death. I don't have to tell you, Maggie. So many women have
been
there.
In it to win it.
I got you, girl. But I mean, COVID, you know, and I know this is controversial, but the truth is that vaccines save lives. And COVID, if you get sick with COVID and you are pregnant, COVID is a blood vessel disease. Do you know what the placenta is made of?
Blood vessels.
If people get sick with COVID when they're pregnant, they are so much more likely to get much sicker, but also to end up on a ventilator, to end up in the ICU, and frankly, to end up dead. And that's just death. We're not talking about the long-term consequences like strokes and blood pressure problems and all of the stuff that stems from those problems. So please, please.
And can I just point out, I think it's ridiculous that we live in a day and age where vaccines are controversial. We figured this out almost 100 years ago. Almost 100 years ago, we figured out that vaccines are the solution to these larger illnesses.
Hey, and they're not for everybody, but please make your own personal healthcare decisions with the help of a healthcare professional and science and data and evidence, not some crazy person like Robert F. Kennedy, who has said, don't get your medical advice from me.
No. I'm not the guy. Don't ask me. Ask your doctors. The other thing I'll just say, since we're talking about this, I want to talk about self-advocacy for a brief moment when it comes to medical care. And Laura, I don't know if you have any experiences with this, but I certainly do, including most recently in advocating for menopausal care. I was like, this, I cannot do this. I don't feel like myself. I need some care that is specifically focused on my symptoms and needs. It has happened before when I've tried to access birth control and been denied. This is many, many years ago. And because I've always been a bossy pants, was like, nope, I'm just going to go talk to somebody else until I find somebody that can help me. But I think as we're entering this fall vaccination cycle period, right, with back to school looming, I know we're just getting the kiddies out of school, but I think it's really important for people to understand if you're not in RFK's made up designated groups that might be able to get the COVID vaccine, advocate for yourself with your medical professional and say, this is why I think I need it. Dr. Lierley, your thoughts, and then Laura, I'd like to turn to you.
Yeah, 100%. And for some crazy reason, access to things like, you know, hormone therapy for menopause or birth control, somehow this is controversial. Somehow this is hard. We've got a bill right now in Wisconsin that would allow pharmacists to provide contraception. Do I love that? No. Do pharmacists want to do this? Probably not. But do we need to be able to get contraception? And we're losing access. If this budget bill passes federally, Planned Parenthood clinics all over the country are going to shut down. Closed. And that means that people who do not have access otherwise, which is a lot of young people, will have no path to get birth control and testing for sexually transmitted infections and cancer screening and fundamental health care. So whatever we can do to patch the system right now until we can fix it, I'm in. But this system is so fundamentally broken and it needs to be fixed.
I saw that list and of that RFK put out of like who could be eligible for this vaccine. And that, and again, it just made me think, well, like, what are we going to have to tell our providers that we have in order to be, you know, in order to have our provider say, yeah, okay, you can have that. So like, do I just have to say like I'm a former smoker now in order to get a vaccine? But it just seems like an extra hoop to jump through where how is this helping people to create these extra walls?
Hey, I want to mention, and Maggie, you said it, advocate for yourself. If you are listening right now and something is not going your way or your gut says this is not the right thing for me, keep searching. Every doctor doesn't have every answer. Even if you're going to an OBGYN doctor and they've given you options and those options don't feel right, find a different doctor. A second opinion is always valuable. And I know that I'm not the best answer for every single person out there. I recommend looking for somebody else because you need to know that your doctor gets you and has your best interests in mind. So yes, please do advocate for yourself. Do your own research, but use a healthcare professional who is trained and accredited and can offer you data and science as you're making those decisions.
There's a theme here, ladies, that I wanted to suss out a wee bit. And that is time and time and time again, what I have seen from the MAGA regime and from a gentleman who currently represents the 3rd congressional district in this state are blanket assertions that have, frankly, very little to zero data support, or when that data is probed at all, when you look into it, it's extremely biased. There's a selective sample, or it's just based on random one-offs. So to me, what RFK is trying to do with DHHS and the vaccines, it's like, well, point to me the study that shows that something like COVID, that this will work just fine, that will have, that fewer people will die under your approach. There's a reason he can't point to that, because it doesn't exist. So, Laura, I wanted to ask you just a theory of governing, which used to be talked about all the time. And I believe the Wisconsin Policy Forum still does this. The concept of data-driven policy decision making. And I have this deep sense that voters right now are very confused, because in one breath, Derek Van Orten is saying, I'll never cut emergency food assistance, and there are no cuts to any of these programs in this bill. That's a lie. And when people are confronted with like two polar opposite statements, I get how it's confusing. As a candidate, how do you propose to get through that noise and to help people see the truth? How do you propose to connect and help people find the good and accurate factual information and not distraction and rhetoric?
Let me try to unpack that question, because I think that one of the things that Derek Van Orten does and does very well is sort of manipulate the truth of what's being proposed in these bills, right? Because of course, the Republican Party didn't come right out and say, we are slashing this, we're cutting X dollars out of the budget. What they did instead is that they said, well, we're going to change the eligibility requirements. We're going to make it so that now, instead of every 12 months to get, you know, reviewed for your Medicaid, you have to get reviewed every 6 months. Or instead of, you know, being 49 years old, now you have to be 64 years old for your SNAP benefits. And so the net result of that is essentially a program cut. And so we're taking the shorthand of that and saying, let's look at the result of what's happening and call it a cut, because we're going to call it what it is. But what he's going to do, and what I think the broader Republican Party likes to do, is sort of walk around the truth of the matter and say, well, black and white, there's no, we're not outright saying that there's a cut, even though that's what the result is going to be. And so I think, if I could take your question a step further,
please.
What do we do to restore trust and transparency in our government officials? And when I think about that, it's number one, like, where are our sources, right? Like, are we citing biased research, or are we citing neutral research that's done by nonpartisan groups? Are we citing, a single, one or two, like, sort of fringe people, or are we looking at the broad base of what a scientific consensus looks like? And again, when we're talking about an issue, are we talking about what's, black and white written on the page, or are we reading between the lines and actually seeing what the impact is going to be?
I just wanted to mention, when it comes to these cuts that are cuts, there are the words, there's the propaganda, but when your future constituents are experiencing the consequences, they will feel like cuts and they will be hurting. How do you, in this environment, as you're campaigning, as you're talking to people who are used to Derek Van Orden, who is a very angry man, how do you get this message across to them that this is what he's saying, but this is what's going to happen, and I care and I want to help? And I know you're not used to that, but I want to help.
And this
is one of the things that,
Please, no. Go ahead, Laura.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, I think one of the things that I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from is that I'm not really running a typical campaign. I'm not doing a lot of stump speeches and fundraisers and things out of the gate. What I've been spending my time doing for the last few weeks, other than my like week and a half or so of being laid up with
COVID,
has been to get out and meet people where they are, right? Is to get into Days of Action, is to join lobbying groups out in Madison, is to, do things like hold a town hall or do a sit-in at Derek Van Orden's office to draw attention to issues. And I think that, for my part, looking at where these mutual aid groups are, because, in the event that the federal government fails us and it goes back to the state, and if the state sort of falls through because, there's still a question as to whether or not they're going to accept the BadgerCare expansion so that more people can be covered and more of these things can be, taken on by the state. Well, if those things fall through, then it's up to our mutual aid groups. It's up to the nonprofits and those other organizations that are going to have to pick up the slack. And I think that part of my responsibility even now is to start to understand where these groups are and who the interested parties are and say, well, here are the resources that we do have in our communities and how they can be helpful.
There's a lot going on there, right? Part of it is like getting ahead of the curve and thinking about harm reduction and remediation before the impacts of these become fully felt. But I believe we're standing at the precipice of quite a moment for those that generally run as Democrats. And that is, people don't think this will affect them. And as soon as a belly goes empty, Medicaid is gone, you can't get your Medicare, you can never get a hold of anyone, it's the Social Security Administration. Once we start experiencing the results, not the rhetoric, but experiencing results, I think this is an opportunity to say, I care. And I'm going to actually do something to help you and to help your life be better. We've got Laura Benjamin, candidate for the 3rd Congressional District, Dr. Kristen Lierley, host of the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on WGBW on Saturdays, and my co-host for this segment of Broad Appeal. I love me a woman candidate because we got broad appeal. We're going to come right back. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My apologies to Joe out of Madison, Ollie from the North Woods, and Jack from Merrimack. I didn't get a chance to get to your calls. Do not worry. At 5:30, it is going to be the midweek sound off. What's on your mind? We can talk more then. We will have the phone lines wide open. because I'm sure all of you have thoughts about the conversation that's occurring in this week's segment of Broad Appeal. Broad meaning my term of deep reverential respect and affinity for women who are fabulous broads out there running for elected office all across the state and country. My co-host this afternoon is Dr. Kristen Lierley. We're joined by Laura Benjamin, congressional candidate in the 3rd Congressional District. Laura, we've been talking about the actual results, the difference between results and rhetoric. And it reminded me, I haven't asked you, why in the heck do you want to run for Congress? It's pretty intense and nasty out there right now. So why are you doing this? Why subject yourself and your loved ones to the scrutiny, the door knocking, the long days, the never-ending radio appearances and all of it?
Well, I like a good challenge, obviously. No, the reason why is that I was writing some policy work for the 3rd Congressional. I've been kind of a behind-the-scenes person for a long time, worked in different organizations in our community for about the last 20 years. And one of the latest things I was doing was writing policy proposals for the Democratic Party. And I started this YouTube channel that started to get some attention. And before I knew it, you know, here I am speaking to folks on April 5th about how America isn't working for regular Americans anymore. You know, we're facing this uphill battle where we have the richest Americans that have all of this wealth and influence. They're using it to kind of decide who gets into Congress, or at least who they're going to fund to get into Congress, so they can really pump their interests into our governance. And then they get kind of the spoils of that situation where, you know, regular people then are sort of pinched on all sides. We're told that there's no money in the budget for any of these things. We're told that we have to pay for our own healthcare. We have to pay for our own education. We have to pay for our own childcare. These are all benefits that, you know, when you look at other countries in the world, they've figured out how to do this. They figured out how to have social programs that allow their working citizens to have access to all of these things in a way that allows them to live their lives. And it doesn't come out of their paycheck directly. It comes out of taxes and other programs. But the reality is that when you look at all of those things as costs on working class people, not only now are the richest Americans making 50 to 80% of the value of our labor, now they're expecting us to cut out extra percentage of that little bit that we do get in order to fund these things that, again, society as a whole should be paid for. And I think I see this differently than a lot of people, because I have a lot of very progressive ideas, but I also see that there's a root in economic and tax principles on how we make this happen. And so I want to kind of flip the script on that and challenge us to think a little differently about how we make this country work for regular people again.
Hear, hear to all of that. I finally reached a moment yesterday where I was like, maybe the saturation is actually happening. One of my favorite listeners and callers texted me and was like, every time I tune into your show, you're talking about giveaways to the wealthiest and blah, blah, blah. It was like all of my hit list of stuff. And I was like, yes, because that's what's been happening. In about 3-4 weeks, we're going to have some merch in our merch store. And Laura, I'm telling you this and sharing this with Kristen and all of you listeners, because one of the things is going to be a button that says 51 trillion. And the reason I use that as the jumping off point is that as a result of the steady march of Republican policies over the last 50 years, $51 trillion in wealth has gone from the bottom 90% to the top 1%. That is not how capitalistic democracies are supposed to work. Money ain't speech. Corporations aren't people. Corruption is not all created equally. We didn't have a billionaire overlord and post-pubescent boys mucking about our critical systems in the past. We're at a new level. And this bill, this brutal bill, is going to amount to one of the greatest wealth transfers yet again from working people to people who don't need any more tax breaks.
Like almost $400,000 a year. Yeah.
Yes.
Crazy.
Top 1% is going to actually make millions more a year. And the bottom quintile, so the lowest 20% of all Americans, are actually going to see their net incomes decrease. They will have less because of this bill. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, when Republican Josh Hawley is calling the bill, Senator Republican Josh Hawley, fist in the air on January 6th, woohoo, is calling the bill immoral. And I'm like, hey, Josh, you might have stumbled upon a nugget of truth there. I mean, holy cow. I never thought I was going to say that ever.
This is where our mutual aid groups, like Laura was talking about earlier, are going to come in handy. I mean, they're coming in handy now, but this is where when people are falling through the cracks, when they're hungry, when they're desperate, when they don't have enough dollars to be able to put gas in their car to get to the things that they have to do, this is where we will continue to help each other, and that realization will be there. And guess what comes after that? The midterms.
The midterms.
Here's what scares me, right? Is that, you know, if we have this over-reliance on mutual aid and we don't, like, some of these things they're talking about, I know they've moved some of the dates back to 2026, some forward to 2028 and 2029. It's like some of the things won't even kick in until after the midterms. And so, like, here's the big picture, right? Like, right now we're taxing labor, we're taxing capital gains, but we've got a rigged game in which the richest Americans have these big piles of money that continue to grow in value, and they're never ever taxed. So they can borrow against these huge asset piles. They turn it into more assets that grow their net worth. And once they hit a point, they do the whole thing over again. There's no taxable event.
They might have made $1 billion. No cap gains. It's called buy. Right.
No tax. No tax at all.
Buy, borrow, die. Not a single penny of cap gains tax. Your network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.